Eclipse.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well, now you've got it.
Red, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given right, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on This Day. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Cameras, cameras.
All right. Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Greetings and welcome to the Morning Star Report. Special Monday, May 29th, Memorial Day. And what do you do on Memorial Day? You remember. You remember important things, important people. And today we are going to remember the birthday boy. John F. Kennedy was born 106 years ago today, May 29th, 1917. And as you know, he's a big part of my life. And today there's a culmination. Today is a very special occasion. Culmination of years and years and years of research and investigation to find out who killed John F. Kennedy, why was he killed, and how we can free ourselves from the tyranny that's set into our country with his death. The takeover of the United States government by the deep state, headed by the CIA. We now have no qualms about speaking openly about it because we have the proof at hand. And during this program, I'm going to present that proof. I'd like to welcome my co-host, Peter Basulka, to the program and to tell you we're going to have a special guest tonight, none other than the spirit of John F. Kennedy, who's going to speak to us some very special sacred words. I spent the day finishing in a frenzy, I guess, a project that I've been working on for 33 years, which is the resolution of the John F. Kennedy assassination mysteries. And I spent the day finishing a video called Primary Target JFK, I Shot JFK, which is the documentary version of the program I did yesterday with Jim Scott. And I'm very proud of it. I worked all day and just finished it just before the show. Tomorrow I'm going to release it on Rumble and on Substack. So be sure to follow me on Substack, the Morning Star Report newsletter. And that is at robertmorningstar.substack.com. There's really only two words you have to remember, substack.com, because you know my name. Put a period after it and we're ready to go. So I'm welcoming now Peter Basulka. I'm going to let him have some opening words and news reports and financial consultation, because things look grim. There was a meeting in St. Petersburg, and 83 countries went there to join the BRICS. That is the original seven nations that joined together to try to stop the abuse of the world economic system by the banksters that have taken over the United States government. So that's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Now they're going to have to extend that name because 83 other countries had the convention, and they're planning to stop using the dollar. As I've said before, the petrodollar has been the thing that saved America's economy since the time of Richard Nixon, who invented it. And God only knows what's going to happen now, because the world is tired of the bullying, the wars, the black operations, the overthrows of government, the murders of the foreign leaders. So the world has awakened, and the jig is up, as I like to say. So the deep state is being exposed on every level. And tonight we're going to talk about how the deep state, specifically the CIA and its takeover of the U.S. State Department with the murder of President Kennedy, has literally turned the world, half the world, into hell. So, Peter, with that cheerful note, I will turn to you for comments as I prepare to listen to our...
Sure. Well, the BRICS Bank has been around for quite some time, and you know, these countries just had to do something a long time ago to try and feed their own economies and not be victim to the U.S. dollar. You know, for whatever reason, it's in mainstream media about the end of the dollar, especially on conservative news like Fox. Because a lot of my clients, you know, all of a sudden they're scared that the U.S. dollar is going to collapse. And I'm saying to myself, where have you been for the past 12 years? You're like, you're already, you know, the inflation's already here and you're just hearing about it now. But, you know, I can't judge them. They watch Fox News and mainstream TV. But I don't see there being a big, this big collapse of American society and the economy because we're going to become the Weimar Republic. You know, the inflation has really already happened. You know, if you look at what the U.S. debt was back when, I'm not plugging Bill Clinton, I'm just using it as a marker in time. When Bill Clinton finished his last year as president in 1999, the U.S. national debt was below $1 trillion. And it didn't matter what president had, Republican or Democrat, they all put about $4 trillion on the national debt since then. And now the national debt is, I haven't even looked at it lately, it's probably over $30 trillion or something, somewhere around $30 trillion. And that's caused a massive amount of inflation. I mean, I remember when things were changing back in about 2006, 2007. I stopped driving to work because gasoline went from a dollar and change to almost $3 a gallon. And I lived 50 miles from work. So I started working from home more back then. And I saw the price of meat and agricultural products skyrocket or double and triple, you know, since the year 2000. So all the devaluation of the dollar has really taken place already. And we are seeing a massive amount of inflation right now. That's they can't lie about, or they don't, well, they'll say they don't want to lie about the inflation that's taken place. But they've hid the inflation, in my opinion, the government and the Federal Reserve has hid the inflation that's taken place over the past 25 years in fudgy economic numbers, you know. And so I don't think it's something to really be scared of. This BRICS thing has been around for a while. These countries have needed some alternative to feed their own economy, so they weren't 100% victim to the U.S. dollar and the U.S. Federal Reserve currency of the world, the reserve currency of the world type of thing. And, you know, you look at countries like England. England, they used to have the pound used to be the reserve currency of the world. They lost their reserve status, and, you know, their people aren't, they didn't become the Weimar Republic. It's just that it really comes down to D.C. won't be able to pull its tricks anymore. You know, they won't have a printing press to create their wars and feed rich people money with government contracts. I mean, a lot of that excess or surplus or malbehavior, D.C. people won't be able to do that anymore. And the American people, the average working guy, might benefit from it because we won't have as much maybe inflation on the street. But D.C. isn't running away with the printing press type of thing. So, but the thing to be worried about, and that we have to keep our eye on, is the digital currency.
Right.
Okay, that's the next. That's the next, like, vax thing, you know, like how mm-hmm. they wanted to vax everybody.
Yes.
And they probably chipped everybody with the vax already. But this digital currency thing is complete tyranny. It can never happen. We need to have competing currencies. And we have to use all of our court system. We have to use all of our political power. We have to use our lobbyist groups on the street for liberty to push back on this digital currency. And the interesting thing is that Ron DeSantis signed a law in the state of Florida that the digital currency specifically out of D.C. that they're working on and cooking up is now banned in Florida, which to me brings up a whole plethora of issues. You know, how are people supposed to pay their mortgages in Florida? If D.C. makes digital currency the currency of the United States and mandates that everybody use it, but the Florida government says, no, my citizens are not using that, well, how do we pay? And so it's bringing all these questions. You can't, you know, this is the way they control people with the mortgage thing. You know, you can't just walk into a bank and pay your mortgage with a bucket of cash. I don't know if anybody realize that, but the bank will not accept cash as payment for your mortgage. It has to be a check. They mm-hmm. want your money. They want to force you to deposit your money in the bank so they know what you have, what you're depositing, and they want to get you to deposit as much of your money in the banking system as possible.
Right.
So people have car payments. People have student loans. People have all that comes out of D.C., the Federal Reserve Bank's banking system, how do we pay it? You know, it's going to be a huge standoff, and I don't know what it looks like. I continue to brainstorm it, but I'm hoping that we never even get to this digital currency thing. I'm hoping that, you know, there's enough good
people.
They
tried it in India. They tried it in India, and they had to relent. So they came to some kind of compromise. The purpose was to take all the currency out of circulation to stop small businesses. The claim is to stop criminal activity, but really small businesses and individuals are not criminals when you're trying to get, you know, food in your mouth, get shelter, just at the basic level. An Englishman, they've already instituted it in England, and an Englishman made a point. He said, you know, until last week, when I walked down the street and I came upon a homeless person, if I had a couple of extra shillings in my pocket, I could give it to them and help them out. But now that's gone. So what are these people going to do? So again, I think it's another part of this population pruning program that they are on to get rid of what Henry Kissinger called many years ago, useless eaters. So that term is repugnant to me. And he's repulsive. And he just turned 100 on Saturday. We've been talking about a lot on the radio, on Hoagland's show, and earlier today I was on another program. But Henry Kissinger is one of the arch-villains of the 20th century. I think that when history is written, he'll be right there alongside Hitler as far as genocidal maniacs. Hitler just did it quickly, you know, over a five-year period. But Henry Kissinger has been doing it over a 75-year period since he was enlisted. He enlisted in the U.S. Army, then became part of the counterintelligence group in the U.S. Army. He migrated from that into what else? The CIA. And he's become the big wig in Washington. And you know, Americans are not fond of big wigs. That was the style of the court of King George III. Everybody wore wigs. They didn't go with their own natural haircuts because it was all pretense, pomp, pretense, and circumstance. So I would like to take this opportunity to bring our next guest to the platform, to the forum. And he is none other than President John F. Kennedy. So, Peter, you'll alert me if there's something goes awry with the sound. But it just happens that on July 4th, Independence Day, not the 4th of July, you know, happy 4th of July, that's not it. It's happy Independence Day. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking to get back to independence. So during an observance of Independence Day on WQXR radio in New York, Senator John F. Kennedy read the text of the Declaration of Independence. The recording took place in Washington, D.C. in June of 1957 for broadcast on July 4th. And here we have it.
When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new gods for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having indirect object, the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance, unless suspended in their operation, till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish their right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records, for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time, after such dissolutions, to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative power, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states, for that purpose obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of land. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our government, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burned our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the work of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy, scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens, taken captive on the high seas, to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections among us, and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an indistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our emigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They too have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must therefore acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of a right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Oh, thank you, WQXR, for that wonderful, wonderful rendition. Folks, when was the last time you heard? Have you ever heard the Declaration of Independence? Well, you know what struck me? Two things struck me. That the charges that are read against King George III are as applicable today against the federal government and Joe Biden as they were against George III. In 1776. I met Charlton Heston in 1997. I sat through a lecture. Then we met afterwards. And during the lecture, he said that there were, he considered five works of literature as sacred writ: the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the works of Shakespeare. Now I understand exactly what he meant when he listed the Declaration of Independence first and foremost after the Bible. The other thing that struck me, you couldn't see it because you're listening, we're watching, but in scanning this copy of the Declaration of Independence, I noticed that in the word Declaration of Independence of the United States, that states was written in big letters and united was in smaller letters. That's a very, very interesting distinction that they made. The important thing for them was states, and a little less than important, united. But the two together have grown and flourished and risen and fallen and risen and fallen, and we are on the rise again. Because tonight I celebrate the disruption, the destruction of the JFK assassination cover-up, and with it, the other cover-ups, specifically speaking about the reasons for his assassination, including the UFOs issue, UFO reality, the alien presence, the Federal Reserve, civil rights, war as a philosophy of state, perpetual warfare as a way of driving the economy while destroying other peaceful, independent nations. So I am very struck and I'm very moved to hear my mentor, my hero, reciting those words, those sacred words, as if he were alive today. And folks, is he not alive in us? They could kill the messenger, but they can't kill the message. And he went to great lengths to record those messages. This one, and what comes to mind, the repugnancy of secret government. And that's what we are fighting. We're fighting secret government, government that is not elected, government that does not answer to the people, government that is prideful, haughty, cruel. As he went through the litany of charges against George III, my mind was picking out events, world events, global events here in the United States, the oppression of the people, the use of the military against the populace. Waco comes to mind. Ruby Ridge came to mind. So we have a lot of food for thought there, and I encourage you to go back to it. It's on YouTube. There are several versions of it. This is the one from WQXR FM in New York City, a wonderful radio station that I used to listen to all the time when I was in college. It was very well known for classical music, tranquility, harmony, and as I like to say, good homework music. So thank you, WQXR. Live long and prosper. Peter, I turn it to you.
Yeah. So when I was listening to, whenever I listened to the Declaration of Independence, to me, the next tyrant to conquer is Washington, D.C. I just don't feel part of Washington, D.C. at all. I think Washington, D.C. is the enemy of the people in every aspect, economically, socially, economically, socially, and politically. And it was interesting when you were saying, you were talking about JFK and listening to his words, and you referred to him as your mentor. And right when you were talking about that, I felt like this, whew, like this lightning bolt, come to me. What I was feeling is that the Declaration of Independence came from a spirit, and it possessed Thomas Jefferson.
Yes.
And that spirit entered JFK.
Absolutely. And John Adams was
the thing about America is coming from
from the Holy Spirit.
I'm getting chills. You know, I'm getting chills as I'm talking about this. So
by, the way, That's why I say, I tell you, today may be the second Independence Day in our history. We're not recognizing it right now. But I'd like to extend my good greetings to Lorianne Fenton, who held a conference and holds it every year. I did not know until now. She held a conference today called JFKBirthdayCon.com. Conference, JFK Birthday Conference. Lorianne Fenton is also a hostess. I still insist on using gender, gender words. I'm not going to call Lorianne Fenton a host. She's a hostess. She's an anchor. She's a reporter. She is a patriot on Revolution Radio. And what you're talking about is a thrill, is a lightning bolt. And I feel I'm being welled up with tears of joy for this day. And listen to the sirens. Listen to the sirens. And I tell you, the sound of a siren is a beautiful thing. And it is because, to me, it means that someone somewhere is in danger, in crisis. And someone who doesn't even know them is racing to the aid. So that's a very powerful thing for me, the American spirit. So now I'd like to turn again to our special guest tonight, John F. Kennedy. And we're going to find out why he was killed on November 22nd, 1963, and why he had to be stopped from giving a speech at the Dallas Trademark. He was going to announce amazing things to the world. And the CIA, the Department of Defense, NASA, some of the heads of the services wanted to keep the status quo, perpetual warfare, getting deeper into Vietnam, the Cold War, because that was keeping their paychecks rolling. Job assurance, you might say. So now I'm going to play for you what probably would have been, very likely, an echo of this speech. In September of that year, President Kennedy appeared at the United Nations and gave a world-shaking speech that frightened the hell out of the establishment, the bankers, the military, the spooks at Langley. And that was his call for an end to strife, end to the Cold War, cooperation with the Soviet Union in space exploration, exchanges of scientific knowledge with the Russian Academy of Sciences. And in order to stop the speech that would have changed the world and all of the history that we've suffered, and I do mean suffering, 58,000 of our youngest, brightest, strongest, most patriotic young men and women were killed in Vietnam. And that was only the first of these wars that were perpetrated and perpetuated by the deep state, specifically the CIA, under the direction of Henry Kissinger, George H.W. Bush, and all the lackeys that followed in train. So let us turn to the President of the United States and listen to his words. These were at the General Assembly in New York City, addressed to the United Nations.
Mr. President, as one who has taken some interest in the election of presidents, I want to congratulate you on your election to this high office, Mr. Secretary General, delegates to the United Nations, ladies and gentlemen. We meet again in the quest for peace. 24 months ago, when I last had the honor of addressing this body, the shadow of fear lay darkly across the world. The freedom of West Berlin was in immediate peril. Agreement on a neutral Laos seemed remote. The mandate of the United Nations in the Congo was under fire. Hold back the darkness. Today the clouds have lifted a little so that new rays of hope can break through. The pressures on West Berlin appear to be temporarily eased. Political unity in the Congo has been largely restored. A neutral coalition in Laos, while still in difficulty, is at least in being. The integrity of the United Nations Secretariat has been reaffirmed. A United Nations decade of development is underway. And for the first time in 17 years of effort, a specific step has been taken to limit the nuclear arms race. I refer, of course, to the treaty to ban nuclear tests in the atmosphere, outer space, and underwater, concluded by the Soviet Union, the United Kingdom, and the United States, and already signed by nearly 100 countries. It has been hailed by people the world over who are thankful to be free from the fears of nuclear fallout. And I am confident that on next Tuesday at 10:30 o'clock in the morning, it will receive the overwhelming endorsement of the Senate of the United States. The world has not escaped from the darkness. The long shadows of conflict and crisis envelop us still. But we meet today in an atmosphere of rising hope and at a moment of comparative calm. My presence here today is not a sign of crisis, but of confidence. I am not here to report on a new threat to the peace or new signs of war. I have come to salute the United Nations and to show the support of the American people for your daily deliberations. For the value of this body's wedding, the reduction of global tension must not be an excuse for the narrow pursuit of self-interest. If the Soviet Union and the United States, with all of their global interests and clashing commitments of ideology, and with nuclear weapons still aimed at each other today, can find areas of common interest and agreement, then surely other nations can do the same. Nations caught in regional conflicts, in racial issues, or in the death throes of old colonialism. Chronic disputes which divert precious resources from the needs of the people or drain the energies of both sides serve the interests of no one. And the badge of responsibility in the modern world is a willingness to seek peaceful solutions. It is never too early to try, and it's never too late to talk. And the United States, as a major nuclear power, does have a special responsibility to the world. It is, in fact, a threefold responsibility. A responsibility to our own citizens. A responsibility to the people of the whole world who are affected by our decisions, and to the next generation of humanity. We believe the Soviet Union also has these special responsibilities, and that those responsibilities require our two nations to concentrate less on our differences and more on the means of resolving them peacefully. For too long, both of us have increased our military budgets, our nuclear stockpiles, and our capacity to destroy all life on this hemisphere, human, animal, vegetable, without any corresponding increase in our security. Our conflicts, to be sure, are real. Our concepts of the world are different. No service is performed by failing to make clear our disagreements. A central difference is the belief of the American people in self-determination for all people. We believe that the people of Germany and Berlin must be free to reunite their capital and their country. We believe that the people of Cuba must be free to secure the fruits of the revolution that have been betrayed from within
and exploited from without. Protection of freedom. And our determination to safeguard that freedom will measure up to any threat or challenge. But I would say to the leaders of the Soviet Union and to their people that if either of our countries is to be fully secure, we need a much better weapon than the H-bomb, a weapon better than ballistic missiles or nuclear submarines, and that better weapon is peaceful cooperation. We have in recent years agreed on a limited test ban treaty, on an emergency communications link between our capitals, on a statement of principles for disarmament, on an increase in cultural exchange, on cooperation in outer space, on the peaceful exploration of the Antarctic, and on tempering last year's crisis over Cuba. I believe, therefore, that the Soviet Union and the United States, together with their allies, can achieve further agreements, agreements which spring from our mutual interest in avoiding mutual destruction. There can be no doubt about the agenda of further steps. We must continue to seek agreements on measures which prevent war by accident or miscalculation. We must continue to seek agreement on safeguards against surprise attack, including observation posts at key points. We must continue to seek agreement on further measures to curb the nuclear arms race by controlling the transfer of nuclear weapons, converting fissionable materials to peaceful purposes, and banning underground testing with adequate inspection and enforcement. We must continue to seek agreement on a freer flow of information and people from east to west and west to east. We must continue to seek agreement. Encouraged by yesterday's affirmative response to this proposal by the Soviet foreign minister on an arrangement to keep weapons of mass destruction out of outer space, let us get our negotiators back to the negotiating table to work out a practicable arrangement to this end purposes. Finally, in a field where the United States and the Soviet Union have a special capacity in the field of space, there is room for new cooperation, for further joint efforts in the regulation and exploration of space. I include among these possibilities a joint expedition to the moon. Space offers no problems of sovereignty. By resolution of this assembly, the members of the United Nations have forsworn any claim that territorial rights in outer space or on celestial bodies, and declared that international law and the United Nations Charter will apply. Why, therefore, should man's first flight to the moon be a matter of national competition? Why should the United States and the Soviet Union, in preparing for such expeditions, become involved in immense duplications of research, construction, and expenditure? Surely we should explore whether the scientists and astronauts of our two countries, and that freedom is more enduring than coercion. And in the contest for a better life, all the world can be a winner. The effort to improve the conditions of man, however, is not a task for the few. It is the task of all nations, acting alone, acting in groups, acting in the United Nations. For plague and pestilence and plunder and pollution, the hazards of nature and the hunger of children are the foes of every nation. As man had such capacity to control his own environment, to end thirst and hunger, to conquer poverty and disease, to banish illiteracy and massive human misery, we have the power to make this the best generation of mankind in the history of the world, or to make it the last. The provision of development assistance by individual nations must go on, But the United Nations also must play a larger role in helping bring to all men the fruits of modern science and industry. A United Nations conference on this subject, held earlier this year at Geneva, opened new vistas for the developing countries. Next year, a United Nations conference on trade will consider the needs of these nations for new markets. And more than four-fifths of the entire United Nations system can be found today mobilizing the weapons of science and technology for the United Nations decade of development. But more can be done. A World Center for Health Communication under the World Health Organization could warn of epidemics and the adverse effects of certain drugs, as well as transmit the results of new experiments and new discoveries. Regional research centers could advance our common medical knowledge and train new scientists and doctors for new nations. A global system of satellites could provide communication and weather information for all corners of the earth. A worldwide program of conservation could protect the forest and wild game preserves now in danger of extinction for all time, improve the marine harvest of food from our oceans, and prevent the contamination of air and water by industry, as well as nuclear pollution. And finally, a worldwide program of farm productivity and food distribution, similar to our country's Food for Peace program, could now give every child the food he needs. New efforts are needed. If this Assembly's Declaration of Human Rights, now 15 years old, is to have full meaning, and new means should be found for promoting the free expression and trade of ideas through travel and communication and through increased exchanges of people and books and broadcasts. For as the world renounces the competition of weapons, competition in ideas must flourish. And that competition must be as full and as fair as possible. The United States delegation will be prepared to suggest to the United Nations initiatives in the pursuit of all these goals. For this is an organization for peace, and peace cannot come without work and without progress. The peacekeeping record of the United Nations has been a proud one, though its tasks are always formidable. We are fortunate to have the skills of our distinguished Secretary General and the brave efforts of those who have been serving the cause of peace in the Congo, in the Middle East, in Korea and Kashmir, in West New Guinea and Malaysia. But what the United Nations has done in the past is less important than the tasks for the future. We cannot take its peacekeeping machinery for granted. That machinery must be soundly financed, which it cannot be if some members are allowed to prevent it from meeting its obligations by failing to meet their own. The United Nations must be supported by all those who exercise their franchise here, and its operations must be back to the end. Too often a project... I also hope that the recent initiative of several members in preparing standby peace forces for United Nations call will encourage similar commitments by others.
I'm on the
air. This nation remains ready to provide logistic and other material support.
Okay.
Policing, moreover, is not enough without provision for Pacific settlement. We should increase the resort to special missions of fact-finding and conciliation, make greater use of the International Court of Justice, and accelerate the work of the International Law Commission. The United Nations cannot survive as a static organization. Its obligations are increasing, as well as its size. Its charter must be changed, as well as its customs. The authors of that charter did not intend that it be frozen in perpetuity. The science of weapons and war has made us all, far more than 18 years ago in San Francisco, one world and one human race with one common destiny. in such a world, absolute sovereignty no longer assures us of absolute security. The conventions of peace must pull abreast and then ahead of the inventions of war. The United Nations, building on its successes and learning from its failures, must be developed into a genuine world security system. Peace does not rest. 2 years ago, I told this body that the United States had proposed and was willing to sign a limited test ban treaty. Today, that treaty has been signed. It will not put an end to war. It will not remove basic conflicts. It will not secure freedom for all. But it can be a lever. And Archimedes, in explaining the principles of the lever, was said to have declared to his friends, "Give me a place where I can stand, and I shall move the world." My fellow inhabitants of this planet, let us take our stand here in this assembly of nations, and let us see that if we, in our own time, can move the world to a just and lasting peace.
Well, folks, now you know why John F. Kennedy had to be stopped from speaking at the Dallas trademark. You hear the sounds of the break? We'll be back after a couple of minutes, and we will continue celebrating the birthday of John F. Kennedy.
Mr. Rowe, I am the host of Reality Extraction. On Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law, spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
The original machine had a base plate of pre-famulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two swerving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fam. The lineup consisted simply of six hydrocoptic Marzal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal lotus-o-deltoid type placed in panendermic semi-boloid slots of the stator, every seventh conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the gram meters.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, taking the confusion out of transmutated lunar girdle springs for 4 years and running. Revolution Radio, the number one listener-supported alternative media radio on the planet. I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got now.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Greetings and welcome back to the Morningstar Report, special edition of The Right Stuff, which we've just heard in the first hour as we have been celebrating the anniversary of the birth of President John F. Kennedy by listening to him recite the Declaration of Independence and, for me, hearing for the first time in 60 years the speech that he gave at the United Nations on September 20th of 1963, a speech for which he was murdered 2 months and 2 days later, because that speech could not be allowed to be given in Dallas at the Trademark at 1 o'clock the afternoon of November 22nd, 1963. I think the thing that they hated the most, meaning the spooks and the hawks, the chicken hawks, the military industrial complex, I think the thing they hated the most was the long enduring applause of all the members of the United Nations applauding his call for peace, unity, a joint venture in space exploration, and basically brotherly love. That's what I got out of that speech. And I'm very happy that you joined us to hear it. If you missed the first hour, you can find it. It's called John F. Kennedy's Final Address to the United Nations, September 20th, 1963. And I know Peter is too young to have been there, like I was, in spirit and through the media. So I'm going to ask him what he thought about that. But I have to say to you folks, I still saw the hidden hand of the deep state in the doctoring of this speech. So you must have heard that there were a couple of jumps in the editing. I do much better editing myself. I make seamless edits of audios. You know, I take out the burps, the hiccups, the oohs, and the ahs. However, there were some disjointed parts of that speech, and I'm going to make a point of finding the complete, unexpurgated speech so I can find out what it was that the deep state still doesn't want us to hear from that speech at the United Nations in 1963. So, Peter, I'm sure that's the first time that you've heard that. So I would like to get your reactions to that before we go on to an interview that I gave last week about the current world situation. Peter.
Well, it's just no wonder why the people of the world loved him. And I'm talking to common people, you know, common Americans. And it's no wonder why the deep state people saw him as such a lethal threat to their existence of power. And it's just unfortunate that we, the people, didn't win that battle to protect him, and the deep state did win. And we're still fighting that battle today. And it's funny when you brought up the fact that I wasn't alive to hear that him talk back then. But there's this, I'm very present to this life that I had as a soldier in Vietnam and died in Vietnam. So I think that I'm alive. I just wasn't Peter.
That's right. I agree. I know that I died in several wars. I had recollections of dying in World War II as well. So I reincarnated right away. I didn't waste time. The war ended in 45, and I came into the world in 48. So I took 3 years of vacation. But, you know, something that has always stayed with me, and I like to recite it, and it's the final passage, I believe, of his inaugural address, where he speaks about our role here on the planet. And he says, With a good conscience, our only sure reward, with God, the final judge of our deeds, let us go forth to lead the land we love, knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own. So may you rest in peace and happy birthday. I was on the verge, if we had had time, I almost sang him happy birthday to join the ranks of Marilyn Monroe, who sang him happy birthday that year. Of all days, my goodness, I just realized it. She sang him happy birthday on his birthday, which is this anniversary as well, that famous birthday party at Madison Square Garden in 1962, the year before he passed away, or was passed away. Back to you, Peter.
Does it go like this? Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday,
Mr. President.
To you. Happy birthday, dear John. Happy birthday to you. And many more. Now, Peter, you know, you spurred me to do it. You just gave me the first word and then imitated Marilyn Monroe. Well,
but
thank you.
Didn't she?
We need a little inspiration to do.
Didn't she sing that verse like, "Happy birthday, Mr. President," like that sexy voice?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I may look her up. I may find her singing "Happy Birthday to Mr. President."
We need to do that now. We should find that song that she sang and play.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's do it. Hey, we're having a party. We're having a birthday party for President Kennedy. Marilyn Monroe.
And while you're looking, who could be the Marilyn Monroe of our times to inspire our president?
Oh, man. I don't know. They are one.
I don't think it's going to be Lady Gaga.
Forget it. Okay, here she is. Folks, we have found it. Marilyn Monroe singing Happy Birthday to President Kennedy. And she'll be on in a moment.
Mr. President, on this occasion of your birthday, this lovely lady is not only punctilious, but punctual. Mr. President, Marilyn Monroe. Perhaps there has been no one female who meant so much, who has done more. Mr. President, the late Marilyn Monroe.
Happy birthday, Mr. President. Happy birthday to you. Mr. President, for all the things you've done, the battles that you've won, the way you deal with U.S. Steel and our problems by the ton, we thank you so much. Everybody, happy birthday!
I can now retire from politics after having had a happy birthday sung to me in such a sweet, open way.
And many more. Well, this is turning out to be quite.
You know what was a little you know what was a little creepy about that, Robert?
Yeah, the late Marilyn.
The late Marilyn Monroe. What was that about?
Well, it was very prophetic. She died, I believe, in September of that year. So she only had a few months to live, and he only had a year and a half, as he used to say, half. And anyway.
I mean, the MC was referring to her being late on stage, but it was pretty creepy to watch.
It's always been creepy to me. That was Peter Lawford, the brother-in-law of President Kennedy, the famous actor, Peter Lawford, one of the Rat Pack. I don't know if people know who the Rat Pack was. That was Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Joey Bishop, Dean Martin, and Peter Lawford, who became a clique, a Las Vegas clique and a Los Angeles Hollywood clique. Very popular, but gangster-ridden. And that was one of the things that really irritated the powers that be, that JFK was associating with known mobsters, specifically Frank Sinatra, the Mafia Don of the West Coast. A lot of people don't realize that, but Frank Sinatra's career was managed by Sam Giancana, since he was just a crooner in Hoboken, New Jersey. And Sam Giancana, who became the mafia boss of Chicago, took over first all of the nightclubs in New Jersey and New York, and then he branched out. He took up nightclubs in other big cities. He branched out even farther. He took over Hollywood. And I know this because I've read Frank Sinatra's FBI file. And Frank Sinatra was a very unruly, unsavory character, despite his charming voice, his good looks, and his funny ways. He was not allowed to serve in the United States Army in World War II because he'd been accused of statutory rape, going out with a 16-year-old girl when he was himself a teenager, maybe 18 or 19. And so they looked upon that as something they called moral turpitude. So he wasn't allowed to serve in the United States Army, even though he made some very good war pictures, most notably From Here to Eternity and Ryan's Express, all of those big Hollywood productions of the 1960s and 70s. Anyway, who is perfect around here? Whoever's perfect, raise your hand. I don't see any hands coming up. It's certainly not mine. So now, good.
Tricky situation when you're 18 and a girl's 16, because girls are faster than boys, and a lot of times boys date younger girls.
That's right.
And probably would have probably had a lot to do with the state that he was in, because I don't think that's a problem in Florida.
Yeah. Well, that was New Jersey in the 1930s. So it's just a matter of fact, you know, that's in his FBI file. But he did, he was taken over. He was taken over by the mafia, because once the mafia took over all the venues, then and they took over the actors and the actresses, and they signed them to contracts. There was a famous, very famous and wonderful singer. His name was Mario Lanza, very handsome Italian opera singer. Made quite a few films, but he had an angelic voice, a really beautiful operatic voice. Plus, he was like a, I want to say a Greek god, we say, but he was a Greco-Roman god. He had the fabulous looks and charm. And his story, I think, is told in The Godfather to some degree. But he was asked to sing at the wedding of a mafia don, and he refused to do it. So the mafia sent some goons over to work him over, and they beat him so badly he died from the beating. So it was a very tough scene, you know, the underworld scene in the United States. And throughout that period of the 1950s, Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, Senator Estes Kefauver were holding investigations into organized crime. And throughout that time, J. Edgar Hoover of the FBI was denying that organized crime existed. He said, there's no such thing as the mafia. And why? Because the mafia had photographs of him and Clyde Tolson cross-dressing and in delicto flagrante. That's a term for a flagrant crime in those days. So the mafia was blackmailing J. Edgar Hoover for years and years and years, threatening him that if he should ever admit that the mafia existed, they'd loosen those pictures on the Daily News, the New York Post, the New York Times, and that would have been the end of the FBI, which might have been a good thing then, because it certainly has turned into an awful, awful organization. So the let's see. Now we're getting into the good dirt of the 1960s. I'll remind you another thing that most of you weren't around for, but that was my first year of high school. And it was while I was in high school in biology class that the speaker started to crackle, and I heard these words: a man and a woman were seen running from the triple overpass. And then the speaker went off, and I'm like, what the hell is that? And it was the first announcement of President Kennedy's assassination. But another significant thing that happened in that year, just a couple of months before, in fact, the month before, in October, the Congress and Senate were holding hearings on organized crime. And they had this guy, a whistleblower, as we would call him today, whistleblower. They called him a snitch. And his name was Joe Valachi. And Joe Valachi made a deal with the feds for protection to testify on his knowledge of organized crime, a.k.a. the mafia. And it was then that the nation found out the true name of the mafia for the first time. And it was called La Cosa Nostra. And that's an Italian phrase that means, it's our thing. You got it? Our thing. La Cosa Nostra. So that was also out. And my God, that, I remember my teacher coming in, my algebra teacher, coming in all excited, having watched the hearings. They were televised. So everyone was hearing the dirt. And that was what Robert Kennedy was talking about when he wrote the book, The Enemy Within. So we still have the enemy within, but it's also the enemy without. And again, going back to the first hour, when we heard the Declaration of Independence, so many of those charges that our founding fathers made against the tyrant, King George III, echo ringing in my ears as modern indictment of the federal government. and its usurpation of power, the denial of civil rights to Americans, the use of military and police powers against the populace. I think that we ought to listen to that recitation of the Declaration of Independence by John F. Kennedy many more times to refresh our memories as to what tyranny means and open our eyes and recognize it, even in our midst. Back to you, Peter. Then I'm going to go to an interview I gave on the current world situation to someone in Russia. Go ahead, Peter.
You really said everything that you stole my words, so I'm
sorry.
Ditto.
Well, that's, you know, we're one in spirit and telepathy works.
Yeah. The only thing I have to say is ditto.
Ditto. Okay. Well, thanks. So let's go. I'm going to play for you an interview I've done now. I've done two interviews with this gentleman, and he is really a very interesting person. He is a Texan by birth. He's American, and he actually moved to Russia. And so first he moved to Ukraine, and then he moved to Russia. And he's asked me to be on his program twice. His name is Regis Tremblay. So he interviewed me, and very timely, because it's about the fall of Bakhmut, the city in Ukraine that the Ukrainians were hoping to turn the tide against Russia. Talk about BRICS, the ASEAN, the 83 countries abandoning the U.S. dollar. So everything that we mentioned in the first part of the program. And so now you're going to hear what my thoughts were on this and the warning that I'm giving to everyone regarding false flag attacks and mind control and MKUltra manipulating our emotions to make us think that the Russians are our enemies.
This is Dateline News and Conversation. My guest is returning for the second time, Robert Morningstar. Robert, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Well, you're welcome. I'm happy to have you. There's a lot to talk about today, an awful lot. Probably can't cover it all in 1 hour, so we'll try to be selective. And, of course, I hope to have you back on again in another week or so and follow up on some things that are moving very rapidly. First of all, the really big news, 5 days ago, Bakhmut, or now it's called Artyomovsk in Russian, because it is in Russian hands. This was a catastrophic defeat for Ukraine, more than symbolic, more than just public relations. What's your take over there in the United States on the fall of Bakhmut? What does it mean? And in your opinion, Robert, what is next?
Well, to make a historic analogy, I would say that Bakhmut is analogous to Stalingrad. When the Nazis lost the Battle of Stalingrad, that was the end of the Fourth or the Third Reich. So the historical analogy is apropos because we have been fighting Nazis in Ukraine. People were saying neo-Nazis, and I said, look, you don't know the history of Ukraine. You don't know about Stephen Banderas. So you don't know about the collaboration of Ukrainian Nazis in World War II and the Waffen-SS with the German Nazis. So don't call these guys neo-Nazis. Their grandfathers were Nazis. Their fathers were Nazis. And these guys are Nazis. So they're Nazis. They're not neo-Nazi anything. So I've been watching the fall of Bakhmut for several months ago, and I listened to a truth teller named Colonel McGregor, who appears on Redacted and a couple of other very good alternate media sites. Stephen Gardner has him regularly, and he just tells you the truth. And we've been watching the dissemination of the Ukrainian army The real statistics are that the Ukrainians have been losing 6 or 7 to 1 against the Russians. Saw the obliteration of a munition dump a couple of, I guess it's about 2 weeks ago in Khmelnytsky. That thing went up like an A-bomb. When I saw it, I said, I haven't seen an explosion like that since Hiroshima. And I wasn't far off from the truth, because it was a depot for Leopard tank ammunition and fuel. And when it was hit by hypersonic missiles from Russia, I saw, as I said, you know, we talk about the mother of all bombs here in the United States when we hit Iraq with these bunker busters. But I haven't seen anything like that, the mushroom cloud. And now the radiation levels are going up all around Khmelnytsky, because the depot had depleted uranium ammunition. And I've been told from reliable sources in the Pentagon that they suspected that Britain had snuck in 2 tactical nuclear weapons into Khmelnytsky, and they just thank God that they didn't detonate. But the radiation levels are going up all around. So the myth of Ukrainian victory is falling apart. And the latest is that in his desperation, Zelensky is ordering, I would call them suicide attacks to try to assassinate President Putin, with very little hope of success. So Bakhmut is gone. And as you said, it's got a different name now, which I haven't registered yet, but they're still calling it Bakhmut here. And he's still begging for money. He's going around in his dirty sweatshirt, never puts on a suit. And that's getting to Americans here. When he came to the Congress, Zelensky came to Congress, and he was just dressed in that regular olive drab, with the emphasis on drab, sweatshirt. And, you know, we want a little more class when we come to Congress. But all he does is go to every country and coerce and beg and act. That's what he is. He's an actor. He's a comedian. So that's the way we feel here in the United States. More and more people are feeling that way. We've given too much money, $170 billion to Ukraine, a tremendous amount of ammunition, and they've squandered it. God, listen, I'm really sad. I'm really sad and sorry to be so blunt, because I have Ukrainian and I have Russian friends for 40 years. Here in New York City. I've lived with Russians. I've had best friendships with Ukrainians. And I like them both, but it's like a cat and dog fight. You don't jump into it, you know, or else you're going to get bitten and scratched. So that's the way I feel about it. And I pray that it's over soon. But it's all, the tragedy of it is that it was all by design. The deep state hate, Biden, see what I call Joe Biden, Joe Biden, Chinese name, and his puppet has been being chaos all over the world for years and years and years. And the jig is on everybody's realizing it. Everything. I'm going to pause for a moment because Skype tends to degrade after a while and playing, so I'm going to just reset it and we'll go back to it in a second. But I mean what I said. Bakhmut has fallen. The myth of Ukrainian victory is crashing. The reality is that Bakhmut, the loss of Bakhmut, is like the loss of Stalingrad by the Nazis. They lost the Battle of Stalingrad, and that marked the end of the Third Reich's war in Russia. It lasted another 2 years, but the defeat was inevitable. So let's get back to reality. Stop waving other nations' flags. Ours is red, white, and blue. It has 13 stripes and 50 stars. And that's what we should identify with. And I feel sorry for the people who were hoodwinked by this con job, this con game, that the money laundering criminal syndicate of Joe Biden, and Hunter Biden have been conducting, and also, they're not alone in it. There are a lot of senators and Congress critters who are involved in it as well. So let's go back to this interview with Regis Tremblay and yours truly. Is being Robert Kennedy Jr. has come up openly again. I'm glad because I've been sending information for years about the CIA's role in the assassination of President Kennedy. I'd like to dedicate this program to memory because his birthday would be Monday. He would have been 106 had he lived. And oh, how the world would have changed for the better if he had been allowed to speak on November 22nd, 1963 at the Dallas Trademark. Back to you.
Okay. Well, anybody that's our age is going to remember John F. Kennedy and the day and the moment he was shot in Dallas. And I have to agree with you. I think certainly that day marked a dramatic change in not only the world, but in the United States. I believe it was a coup, and we have not recovered from the coup. Every president since, every single one of them since, has just been a mannequin and a puppet in the hands of this.
Oh, sure. They were all globalist gatekeepers. Cabal. We call them gatekeepers.
Yeah,
let me show you two books. This book, the most important book you've written, alongside with this book. This book was written in 2002 and told the whole story based on CIA documents where he by a name was Robert Trumbull. And he was director of clandestine activities for the CIA. And he was in every meeting, every planning meeting for the assassination of President Kennedy in 1963. Between March and November, specifically November 14th was the last meeting, they enlisted the clandestine operations, the counterintelligence. They brought in the mafia. And this book tells the story. Primary target, JFK. The man you see in the picture is the man who shot President Kennedy. His name is James Files. And I was led to him by a Virginia state trooper who contacted me in March and sent me the files, the CIA files. It was called Operation Zipper. And to the whole in a couple of short sentences. After President Kennedy and Robert Kennedy stopped the invasion of Cuba and stopped the destruction of the world through nuclear holocaust, by stopping the invasion of Cuba by the U.S. military, they forestalled a nuclear war between Russia, then Soviet Union, and the United States. And in an outrage, the CIA, Department of Defense, got together and they had an extrajudicial trial. A court-martial was held, an unconstitutional court-martial, by the way. And they charged President Kennedy and Robert Kennedy with high treason. And they decreed the death sentence on them and called for public execution. So that put the plan into the works, and that's the... We've got the machinery going. So they enlisted the mafia in Chicago. It was known as James. And he was a CIA operative and a mafia hitman in Chicago. So they got Charles Nicoletti, Johnny Roselli from the mafia, along with James Files. And he was one layer of the assassination teams, plural. Another layer was French assassins that were... hired by Otto Skorzeny. He was one of the Nazis, preeminent Nazi in World War II. He was Hitler's top commando. And after World War II, he was enlisted by the CIA as one of what we call the paperclip Nazis, but he wasn't operating in the United States. They set him up in Madrid, Spain, with a front as an architect and an engineer. But what he was engineering were political assassinations of undesirable journalists and politicians in Europe, as well as setting up an assassination network using the mafia here in the States. It just turns out we discovered Aros Guarzani, famous for being the top commando. He famously parachuted with his gun to a mountain in Italy to rescue Mussolini after he was captured by the partisans. We found out that Guarzani was in Dallas on November 22, 1963, and he was out hunting. And who was he with? He was out hunting with D.H. Byrd, the man who owned the Texas School Book Depository. So all these this information came to me, and I was introduced to James Files, who spent 26 years in prison. And he had a conversion. He had a Christian conversion because he had a miraculous, two miraculous experiences. He says that Christ came to him in the jail, and that after the second one, he thought he was going to. He said, "Why are you here?" Christ said, "I'm here to take you home." And James Bell died instead. It turned out that he was paroled. And after that parole, he converted. He married a lady named Pamela Ray. Together, they wrote that book. And I had the privilege of interviewing him on Palm Sunday and Easter Sunday, and he made a live on-the-air confession on my show, The Morningstar Report, which is on Revolution Radio, revolution.radio, the link or the URL. I'm on Studio A on Sundays at 3 o'clock and on Mondays at 10 p.m. on Studio B, revolution.radio. So it's all come to a head. And after the movie that we spotlighted on our last program, it's called E.T.'s Among Us, Part 7, subtitled UFOs, the CIA, and the Assassination of JFK. It's just broken openly out. Everyone's talking about the issue in the CIA, including journalists. And I'm proud to say that Coast to Coast AM had me on the program last Tuesday, and the country knows. So it's a good time to be alive. It's a good time to stay alive. And that's what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to get people to stop believing the mass media news, stop believing the fairy tales that are telling us, stop believing that we are enemies. We should all be united. President Kennedy worked with Nikita Khrushchev to save the world from nuclear holocaust. And I would also like to remember Captain Vasily Arkhanov, who was a Russian submarine captain who also helped to stop the world. They thought that World War III had broken out, and the commissar, the other two people on the submarine, wanted to launch nuclear ego. And he insisted that they shouldn't do it because they had not gotten orders. It's a long story, but let's remember them. Nikita Khrushchev, Vasily Arkhanov, John F. Kennedy, and Robert F. Kennedy. Those four men worked together to save the world then, and we have to work together now. As I was telling you, we expect some bad things when governments get desperate internally and are facing power struggles. They try to turn the attention to an enemy without. But the enemy here is within, and the American people know. Joe Biden is a traitor to our way of life, and he has intentionally been destroying our culture, our society, in order to impose on us the worst tyranny I don't expect it, because we're going to beat it. But we're trying to impose a global government people with a Nazi, authoritarian, dictatorial superstructure as the governing body. And that's what we see in the New World Order, the WEF, the WHO, the so-called World Health Organization that wants to take over every country in the name of public health. That's another big lie. Back to you.
All right. So, Robert, I have to ask you this. First of all, I wasn't aware of this new information you've been revealing. I'll have to further look into that myself. But my question is, to me, everything that started with the assassination of Kennedy has led us to where we are at this very moment.
Yes.
Would you agree with that? I think it is this.
Absolutely.
This cabal.
Absolutely.
That's behind it. Well, tell me about that. How do you see the connection?
Well, the connection to me now, after I've been studying this event nearly 60 years. November is going to be 60 years. I lived through the Cuban Missile Crisis, and I am a student of history, and I have found the documents that prove everything I'm going to tell you. We imported the worst Nazis imaginable into the United States because the fear of the Soviet Union, and well, Stalin was something to be feared. Stalin and the KGB and Schmerz, we know all about that. And they were really serious, serious, diabolical opponents. So the United States had no intelligence resources in Eastern Europe or in the Soviet Union. But the Germans had been monitoring it, vast networks in Eastern Europe and in the Soviet Union. So at the end of the war, we captured Reinhard Gehlen, master leader apparatus, spying espionage apparatus. And he was captured and he was put into an American prisoner of war camp. While in the prisoner of war camp, he appeared and asked them for permission to attempt a Trojan horse operation to save their lives. Because it was understood between the Soviet Union and the American military, who were allies at the time, that they had to exchange lists of all the prisoners of war that they had taken over. Now, the atrocities that have been committed by the Nazis, and particularly in Ukraine, after the Germans, Ukrainians killed more Jews than any other ethnic group. So Reinhard Gehlen knew that he was on the desk to the Union, his presence would be demanded in Moscow for trial and execution. So he went to an American general, General Siebert, and he pitched offering his entire organization and his cadre intelligence officers to the United States in exchange for protection. So the United States Army engaged in a non-constitutional negotiation with a foreign power and accepted his offer and then presented the deal as fait accompli, a done deal, to President Truman. And that began the importation of this espionage group of Third Reich super spies. But at the same time, Wernher von Braun, who was also a member of the SS and the Gestapo and the top rocket scientist, he also was in the same predicament. And so he and his group of scientists decided that their only hope to live, if they were captured by the Russians, they'd be dead. So they took their plans, their blueprints, their most important papers and experiments, they buried them in a German forest. They found out where the American army was, and they started heading toward the American lines, and they surrendered themselves to an American army, U.S. Army company, that was commanded by none other than Clay Shaw. Clay Shaw that was brought to trial by Jim Garrison in 1966 and 67, charging him with complicity in the assassination of President Kennedy. Clay Shaw was a CIA asset. He was a CIA operative. Assassinated. The CIA went out to destroy him, to discredit him, used every major newspaper and every major news broadcast organization, ABC, CBS, NBC, Time Life magazine, to assassinate his character. But Jim Garrison was a good, honest, patriotic American, a former FBI agent and district attorney of New Orleans. Somebody asked me on the Coast to Coast program, whose father worked with him, said, how close was Jim Garrison to the truth? I told him 95% to 98%. When he said the CIA was involved in it, he was 100% correct. So we imported the Nazis, and slowly this Third Reich mentality went through the CIA and then branched out into other departments of the United States government. I'd like to point out that if you read Albert Speer's book, Inside the Third Reich, he points out that in 1943, they were desperate. Germany was losing. Albert Speer's typical genius. And what he did, amalgamated the espionage and internal security apparatus of the Third Reich with the science and technology apparatus of their rocketry and advanced scientific research, like anti-gravity and flying saucers, Hounabu and the Vril craft. They were real. And so they amalgamated the two, and they gave it the name the Middle Work. So I often ask people, why do you think the Central Intelligence Agency is called Central Intelligence Agency and not United States Intelligence Agency? It is precisely because in the contract that Reinhard Gehlen negotiated with the U.S. Army, he stated specifically that his group, his Germans, did not work for the Americans, because if they were to work for the Americans, they would be considered traitors or quislings after the Norwegian. Quisling means traitor. It was a Norwegian who collaborated with the Nazis and established a Nazi government in Norway. So the word quisling is like Benedict Arnold. So that they would be considered quisling. So it was clear in their contract that they don't work for the Americans, they work with the Americans. And the clause says this, I memorized this. It said, if ever the interests of Germany should diverge from those of the United States, it is understood that our allegiance is first to Germany. The second clause that I memorized was that he demanded that their funding be invisible, black operations funding, that it should not appear on the congressional record, which leads us to how was the CIA going to fund these operations if they weren't getting funds from Congress to do so. Well, that's where the drug trafficking comes in. They got involved in global drug trafficking with the mafia, and the profits from those were funneled into the funding of the CIA black operations. And all of this is old news. The late Gary Webb broke it way back in the 1990s in a book called Dark Alliance. And George H.W. Bush became the leader of this global drug trafficking operation. One of the reasons why they killed John F. Kennedy is he wanted to pull out of Vietnam, but not only that, he wanted to stop the heroin trade, the heroin traffic out of the Golden Triangle. And when he did that, he was going to end the funding, lucrative funding that not only the CIA, the French government was involved with the Corsican Mafia, who controlled the Golden Triangle in Laos and Cambodia. And so Kennedy in 1962 sent a general named General Edward Lansdale to Vietnam to tell them we got to shut down the heroin traffic. And so he came back and he was enlisted into the Kennedy assassination plot. He was the on-field commander. He was the man in Dealey Plaza who was overseeing the various assassination teams and coordinating them, General Edward Lansdale of the U.S. Air Force. And he is depicted in the movie JFK as the man who sent Mr. X to Antarctica. And Mr. X was Colonel Fletcher Crowdy. So we have all the information now. And you have it now. All you have to do is read Primary Target JFK by James File, Pamela Ray and James File, or Regicide by Gregory Douglas. So, as I like to say, the jig is up. People know the truth. And so, and you're helping to get the truth out. You just thank you for having me on the program. So, folks, there you have it. The operation is called Operation Paperclip. And with the last few minutes that we have in the program, I'm going to read to you directly from the CIA files that were given to me by Jim Scott, who was my guest yesterday and who appears in the video that I've been producing. The operation is called Operation Zipper. And this is summary of conferences held March to November 1963. The man who wrote them was Robert Crowley. The participants were Director of Central Intelligence McCone, James Angleton, Mr. Crowley, William Harvey, Deputy Director of the FBI, William Sullivan, and Lieutenant Colonel Cass, of the representing the Department of Defense, a member of the U.S. Marine Corps. So, distribution as above. Statement of policy. The removal of the President and Attorney General has been determined, two, by their contacts with top-level intelligence officials of the Soviet Union and the subsequent release by the President and the Attorney General of the highest-level security material to a government that stands in direct opposition to the United States. These individuals cannot be permitted to occupy their official positions. Point number three, by treating with the enemy on the Cuban issue, and actively blocking legitimate military actions against a Soviet-Cuban armed enemy in close proximity to the United States, these individuals have endangered the people of the United States and permitted enemies of this country to actively place atomic weapons within the reach of many American cities. By removal by impeachment or other legal means is considered unfeasible and too protracted. Therefore, an alternative solution has been found to effect this removal. This removal is the result of a consensus between the various concerned official agencies. We go on. This operation, codenamed Zipper, was under the direction of James Angleton of the agency, assisted by Robert Crowley and William Harvey, also of the agency. Point number eight, the government departments directly concerned consisted of the Central Intelligence Agency, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Other government agencies involved, but not with specific knowledge, were the U.S. Department of the Treasury, the National Security Agency, the Naval Security Group, Inter-Armco, the U.S. Department of State, Passport Division. Following this, the removal of the president, the new president, who had been fully briefed prior to the act, agreed in the interest of national concerns to appoint a special commission chaired by Chief Justice for the purpose of setting public concerns to rest. Mr. Angleton was in complete control of all evidence presented to this committee, meaning the Warren Commission, and worked closely in conjunction with Mr. Sullivan of the FBI to ensure that nothing was brought before the committee that it did not want to acknowledge. As both the vice president and the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation had been slated for replacement by the Kennedy faction, their support for this project was practically guaranteed from the outset. The vice president came to believe that an attempt would be made on his life at the same time and was greatly concerned for his own safety. As the vice president and the director of the FBI were longtime neighbors and very friendly, the director has repeatedly assured the president that he was not a target and that no shots were fired at him. We continue with the time that we have left. We might have. No shots were fired at him in Dallas. Point 14, the president has been reassured, but is still considered very leery of any possible such actions being taken against himself or members of his personal family. One of the primary goals of Zipper, the removal of the Attorney General, has been discussed repeatedly with the president by the DCI, Director of Central Intelligence. And the president has agreed to gradually force him out of his position. He has stated, however, that the popularity of the Attorney General is such that this removal must be performed with care. That is the show for tonight. Happy birthday, Mr. President. And join us on Sunday. Keep an eye out tomorrow for primary target JFK on Suspect. Have a good night. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio. Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what cause.